Walking around an aircraft storage facility is one of the more surreal experiences an aviation nerd such as myself can encounter. Most refer to these places as boneyards, with the implication being that this is where airliners go to die. In many cases, this is fact. The desert provides both the space and dry, warm climate to slow the inevitable process of corrosion, so any parts of value can be removed and sold to support airworthy frames in service around the world. People don't know is that a significant percentage of the resident aircraft here will fly again.
You know, if we were like in a situation where we had to get airborne and like this is all that was there.
Well, like a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, zombie apocalypse. We're in Murata. These are the only two airplanes that we have access to for whatever reason. Could we do it?
I would choose this one.
Okay.
And yeah, I think we could do it.
I mean, we'd have to remove all that tape, all that aluminum foil.
Yeah.
This one's ready to go.
We could pull that. It just depends on which one has gas. We have to get fuel.
They're in long-term storage and can be reactivated with a maintenance event called a return to service check, which is why there's almost always a Part 145 repair station, or MRO, on the field. Murana is one of the largest and most active examples of this.
Positive rate, gear down.
Are you judging the airplane by its paint condition?
Of course.
It's a Boeing, right? So like the throttle quadrant is gonna look like a 737 or a 757 or whatever, which we're used to. It's gonna start, you are a 72 guy.
Yeah, so. I could start this airplane, no problem.
Yeah.
The reasons why an airplane is put into storage are varied. Many are done, scrapped, parted out. Others are stored due to a market downturn or reduced demand. Think COVID. Parking and maintaining an aircraft in flight-ready status costs a lot more than long-term storage and reactivation. Sometimes an aircraft comes off lease and just doesn't have another lessee lined up right away. Often, an older passenger aircraft may just not be desirable anymore, but could return to the skies after being converted from a passenger plane to a freighter. A huge investment by a prospective owner or operator that can add a decade or more of service life to a jet that's been hauling passengers around its whole life. As a ferry pilot, I'm a frequent visitor to facilities like this, and it never gets old. A lot of the time, we're operating the plane's last ever flight into the boneyard before part out and recycling. But other times, we're resurrecting a viable aircraft that's been returned to service before a P2F, the colloquial term for passenger to freighter conversion.
But, you know, what it really is a storage facility paired with a maintenance facility. And so where we are right now is inside of a maintenance facility on the Pinal Air Park, the only maintenance facility on the Pinal Air Park.
As of 2025, several aircraft types are being converted to freighters, including the A321 and A330, the 737NG, the 757, 767, and the 777-300. After retiring from passenger service, the planes are purchased at a relatively low price, like $8 to $10 million for a narrowbody or $12 to $20 million for a widebody. Then, the new owner makes another investment in the cargo conversion, which is roughly equal to the cost of the acquisition, and then the converted aircraft is reborn with another decade or two of service life for about a third of the cost of a new-build freighter.
We probably put at least a quarter of these airplanes into this place over the years.
Thank you. Kevin Casey, a friend of mine and former president of PEMCO, once told me, a good freighter is a cheap freighter. And those are wise words. So it's not surprising that so many P2Fs are out hauling cargo around the world. On this mission, we'd fly an Airbus A330, retired from Taiwan's flag carrier China Airlines, out of storage in Goodyear, Arizona, to Istanbul, Turkey, where it would be converted on behalf of Cargo Aircraft Management, or CAM, a U.S.-based lessor focused exclusively on freighter leasing. An A330-300 can be configured to carry between 300 and 400 passengers across vast distances of 6,000 to 7,000 nautical miles. As a converted freighter, the versatile platform can haul 62 tons of palletized cargo between nearly any two continents, and so far over 50 of these beasts have been converted.
And this will be the last time this airplane flies with seats in the back. But, got a decent business class cabin here. There's Bob. What do you think he's doing?
Working, of course.
Yeah, there's all the camera rig stuff. Oops, I gotta cap that lens. Anyway, decent condition of the cabin here. Still, it's a 300.
The Airbus A330 is a big, heavy, wide-body, the kind of plane you'd take from New York to Paris or Tokyo to Seattle. But from a pilot's perspective, it's nearly identical operationally to its smaller sibling, the A320. Airbus is masterful about maintaining commonality between its types, and if I'm being honest, I don't even know why it's a separate type rating, but it is. We could have made Goodyear to Istanbul non-stop on this mission, but we opted to make a fuel stop in Detroit, where the fuel was almost half the price. When you're taking on 20,000 gallons, the cost difference is immense.
611, you got?
Yep. At 5,000.
All right, now we got to change all this stuff.
We do?
Yeah.
Different?
Totally different. Does not have a Goodyear.
It's just a vector departure.
Yeah. All right, so let's see. Radar vectors, Drake. Yep, all looks good.
Okay.
All right. We have two good starts. You're clear to disconnect. Thanks for that help.
We ran this op with a crew of three. Bob, myself, and Pat Lewis, who's our second Pat, along with Pat Roa. Bob would go first and get us to Detroit, then I'd take over for the long leg across the Atlantic. Pat would rotate in and out of the right seat, giving Bob and I rest breaks and also serving as our camera operator.
20.1, 2545, okay, I got the transponder is TARA 5611, 5,000 feet is the squawk, we're trimmed.
Check.
We've got speed brakes and predictive wind shear coming on.
Okay.
Despite having a lot of heavy metal laying around, Goodyear is primarily a small airport with a lot of single-engine GA training activity.
Bird shit all over the windows.
Hit your dive cock, click 5501 in, left down, left 0.1.
Left 501, red right 1, continue. Traffic holding in position, a heavy earbud.
Runway 21, hit your dive cock, click 5501.
The airport also lies under the Phoenix class Bravo airspace and almost right next door to Luke Air Force Base. So often we have to wait a little while before we're accepted into the airspace and on our way.
Automatic 177 heavy fly runway heading, runway 21 cleared for takeoff.
Runway heading clear for takeoff, automatic 177 heavy.
Off to our right, on the west side of the runway, is the storage part of AirSail's Goodyear facility. Years ago, the planes over there didn't turn over much, and every time we passed through, it was pretty much the same usual suspects. But lately, there's been a lot more turnover, and it seems like every time we're through, there are new tenants baking in the sun, waiting for whatever lies ahead for them.
501, calculation for the heavy Airbus departure roll, runway 21, clear to
set.
As we rolled down the runway on departure, the airplane did what it was designed to do and inhibited the high EGT indication until we were weight off wheels. As soon as we rotated, we got the caution bell. The reason it does this is to prevent a dangerous rejected takeoff maneuver at high speed for a non-critical warning.
That's great.
You're up.
1 EGT's up. I'm going to bring it back a little.
Yep.
Getting a high EGT temp on takeoff out of the Phoenix area with an airplane that hasn't flown in a while is pretty normal, and it usually only presents itself on the first departure. Things generally return to normal after a full takeoff and landing cycle. The remedy for high EGT is to simply pull the thrust lever of the affected engine back slightly until it's out of the red.
Loop departure, Dramatic 177 Heavy, climbing 3,000 for 5,000 runway hit.
177 Heavy, Luke, departure, good morning. The altimeter is 2989 for Luke.
2900, copy, sir.
177 Heavy, eye death, please.
Roger.
I'm at 177 Heavy, turn to contact 3 miles southwest, Goodyear Airport. Turn right, heading up 2900, maintain 5,000 vector straightway.
All right, 2900, heading right turn, and maintain 5,000.
One to go.
Outstar.
Roger.
As I've said in the past, the first takeoff and really the first 10 minutes of a flight with an aircraft coming out of storage is always the moment of truth. If we're going to have any mechanical issues with the plane, it generally rears its head during this window. If I had to estimate, probably 1 out of 20 departures with an aircraft out of storage requires an air return. 1 out of 5 alerts us to a nagging issue, which will either clear on its own or will just require a little diligence and troubleshooting in order to carry the issue in question all the way to our destination. In short, 80% of the time, we're problem-free, and about 5% of the time, we actually have to return to the airport and have maintenance correct the problem before heading out on our way. On this one, no major issues. Just a little nagging EGT margin issue, which cleared all by itself.
Hold again.
Get the 5-1 record.
Where do you tell if it's recording?
I see a flashing.
Oh, yeah.
At Albuquerque, Nomadic 177 Heavy is 12,000.
Look for height.
Nomadic 177, Albuquerque Center, Roger. I'm maintaining 14,000, Phoenix up. And then I'll be separate.
Okay, copy 14,000 for Nomadic 177. I've missed the rest. You broke up. I think we're a little low here in the mountains.
Nomadic 177, be stepping you up for traffic.
Roger that.
Oh, catch what he said.
They're stepping us up. Traffic. Oh, okay. You want to deviate around that?
No. Okay. I think we're gonna. We've got 40 miles to turn. We're gonna make a big turn.
Okay. Yeah.
I think we'll get higher too.
All right. Works.
Let's see.
Big buildups of isolated thunderstorms on the climb out of Phoenix in the afternoon is to be expected.
I'm unable to do right duty for mail couriers.
You want to go left a little, Bob?
It will be to the left.
No, I want to go right.
You want to go right?
Okay, yeah, we're
there's a lot of shit over there.
Make our way through it.
We can see the intensity of the cells in our nav display painted by the radar, and that's a way better indicator than just looking at a cloud visually. With a load of passengers in the back, airline pilots dodge the cells completely most of the time, which requires ATC coordination. With just us on board, we usually stay on the track and just blaze through the yellows if it makes ATC's life easier. The airplane can take it, as long as you slow it down a little bit.
Nomadic 177, are you going to take a turn direct to Winslow VOR?
Yeah.
Nomadic 177, clear to Winslow VOR.
Direct Winslow VOR, Nomadic 177.
Upper 1980, contact Phoenix, approach 128.65.
See what I tell you.
Right into the fucking yellow. You might
want to
slow roll that
turn.
We're
going to
be over that shit.
And then we're 1-2-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-
We got standard.
Standard.
Yeah, American 937, is there a deviate left from this buildup?
After 30 minutes of navigating around, over, and through the buildups, we were at cruise and the visibility was endless. A beautiful day over middle America. At 3 hours, the flight to Detroit was very short, and because this was my first time filming an A330 flight with the expanded camera setup, I wanted to spend some time experimenting with shot angles and mounting points. Each aircraft type has its best locations, and it takes me some time to figure out what angles, lenses, and filters are going to work best. Pat took the right seat, and I went back to caffeinate and start messing with the camera gear. Like every other aspect of producing cockpit casual, there's always a learning curve with the new gear and new situations. So over time, the content and overall quality of the final product improves.
So this shot will be filmed from Bob's shoulder view for the landing into Detroit. We're passing over, I guess that's Lake Michigan, right? Now while we're setting in to Detroit, take a quick walk, secure everything.
Being all alone in the back of an empty widebody really gives you the sense of how massive the aircraft truly is. It also doubles as a reminder to me as to why we always fly in business class on the long-haul flights. It's probably been 12 years since my last coach seat on a long-haul, and I barely remember how terrible it is at this point. For a change, I found myself in the jump seat with a camera in hand. Surprisingly, this doesn't happen too often, so I grabbed one of the DJI portables in an attempt to capture some of the high workload scenes, a phase of flight which I normally get via fixed position cameras on mounts.
10?
Yes.
That's it. It's Detroit, man.
Oh,
for real.
All right.
The arrival into Detroit coming from the southwest means starting down just past Chicago. And from the time we start descending, ATC has to mix us in with a lot of traffic all the way down to touchdown.
Had a bunch of 77 heavy traffic, 2 o'clock, 4 miles northwest down, 8,500, 900,000, Airbus 320.
They provide separation and keep things flowing smoothly, but on a clear day like this, they can rely on us to maintain visual contact with other nearby aircraft to maximize efficiency.
Automatic 177 heavy, 5 degrees left, maintain 8,000. 5 left. Automatic 177 heavy contact, try to approach 124.05 today.
124.05, automatic 177.
Delta 2587, reduce speed to 210, then descend to maintain 8,000.
As we descend in closer to the airport environment, we get handed off from the area control centers to the approach controllers that manage smaller, lower, and busier airspace, sequencing planes in and out on both approach and departure procedures to the main airport.
4,000. Flaps 1.
Flaps 1,
Flaps 1. Inside of 30 miles, we're now actively slowing the airplane down and starting to configure for landing. Modern jets like the A330 are very automated, and self-managed tasks like transferring fuel from the trim tank in the tail forward and from the outboard wing cells to the main tanks in the wing route. We verify these automations by simply checking the green advisory text on the ECAM screen.
Do you want your EA in there for the ILS?
2587, caution, wait, turbulence, keep on the heading.
120 heading.
Because the skies were clear, we'd fly a visual approach, meaning once cleared, we just fly the airplane like it's a big Cessna 172 and maneuver to the runway with our eyes out the window and hand on the stick.
Delta 2149, 10 seconds to tower, 108.4. 2,500.
It's really the only time pilots of modern airliners get to actually hands-on fly.
Nomadic 177 heavy, turn right, heading 190 Metro Airport, 2 to 3 o'clock, 1 2 miles.
Sight. 190, field in sight, Nomadic
177. Nomadic 177 heavy, clear visual approach, 2 1 left.
Visual runway 2 left, Nomadic 177. Hey, 2 1 left, we have that in the box.
Matic 177 Heavy, maintain 170 knots or greater till 5 mile final. Contact Metro Tower 118.4.
170 or greater and contact Tower Matic 177.
Delta 2587, reduce to 170.
Photo 170, Delta 2587.
Runway 177 Heavy, Matic Tower 1140 knots or runway 2 left to land number 2.
971 left number 2, Matic 177.
That's got the lever above the glide, so I'm gonna go manual.
Oh, sure.
Show y'all how it's done. Flaps 3. Gear down. Huh?
Don't drop that, Tony.
Yeah. No kidding.
What do you want for auto brakes?
You can just give me low.
Go to 2149, right at Juliet.
Flaps full. Flaps full. Flaps.
2149, Juliet, short of Juliet, 7, I call the ramp.
Go flight director off. Let's go on visual.
Go to 458, cross 2953, join Foxtrot, contact ground 48.
Ready, go.
Ghost 4072. Ghost 4072, RNAV 4, runway 2 right, clear takeoff.
RNAV 4, runway 2 right, clear takeoff. Ghost 4072.
500. Retard, 3.
First stop, then the second. There we go. There's all the mains down, and now the nose.
Like many other wide bodies, the A330 has a double bogey main landing gear, basically a cluster of four wheels on each side. Unlike other planes with a double bogey, though, the 330 has a unique way of touching down, and kind of makes you work to land each wheel pair separately in the flare. It's kind of hard to describe, really.
I love how the mains hang down on this airplane. You touch down on those first. I mean, you still got to hold it off just a little bit until the back ones touch down.
Yeah.
Gassing up a wide body with a single fuel hose is a huge time suck due to the sheer quantity of fuel that needs to be loaded. With a 737 or A320, we usually load 4,000 to 6,000 gallons, and it takes about 20 minutes. With a heavy, the fuel loads are more like 20,000 to 50,000 gallons, and that would take hours to pump through a single hose. The A330 has two single point receptacles, and the 777 has four, with two per wing. This cuts the time for refueling in half. It was my turn to kick the tires before setting off across the pond. I'd argue that the second leg walk around is actually the most critical one on a flight out of storage, because that's when the leaks appear and any improperly secured hanging panels get noticed. There were neither this time.
All right, let's go do this.
As usual, the signature team at Detroit got us turned fast, and we closed up and strapped in for the long haul.
Yeah. I had a burrito. Actually, the burrito that I had was quite decent. It was like a breakfast burrito, but it had like jalapenos in it. Really good.
I did. Yeah, just the two new ones.
And then you good with closing the door? All right. Oh, you did.
Okay.
A real.
Oh, look, I also looked up our cell call code.
Oh, no shit. Thank God, man.
No, man, I was thinking.
Fuck.
How did you look it up? Box.
Ray 1-0 Mike, heavy metro ground detected, runway 2-1-8 via Mike.
Turkey is one of those destinations with strict rules and abnormal landing requirements. Aircraft operating inbound on a company call sign like Nomadic are treated as commercial airline flights, requiring a lot more documentation and permitting. So we'd operate using the aircraft's registration number instead to simplify things. We made the short taxi, about 5 aircraft lengths, over to the departure runway and were ready upon reaching.
November 0, Charlie, Mike, heavy, RNAV 2, Winters, runway
21
right, clear for takeoff.
RNAV 2, Winters, clear for takeoff, 810, Charlie, Mike.
You guys ready?
Ready.
I'm just going to flex, Bob.
Yep, sounds good.
It's hard to tell whether you're in a 320 or a 330 at first glance, but when you pull back on the stick to rotate in the 330, it's really clear. It's a heavy bird and lumbers up off the ground smoothly compared to how a 320 just jumps into the sky.
Zero Charlie Mike Heavy, we'll see you, thanks. Hello, departure, November 810 Charlie Mike Heavy is with you.
Flight time from Detroit to Istanbul was 10 hours and 17 minutes. Having a third pilot and no fuel stops would make for an easy day. The eastbound route over the North Atlantic means a quick sunset, a short night, and a fast sunrise before landing Istanbul under the afternoon sun. As we left the terminal area, I paged through the systems display to make sure everything looked normal, then checked the fuel on board with the first en route fix so that we could track our fuel burn and compare it to what was planned. With 135,500 pounds of fuel on board, the aircraft weighed a whopping 403,920 pounds, climbing through 10,000.
Nice glasses. I think those are girls' glasses.
I think that, well, I don't know. They're whatever I pulled out of a drawer. No, I buy like multi-packs from Amazon, like literally 10 of these at a time. There are different colors. Blue, black, like tortoise shell, you know, for the fancy stuff. And yeah, because I lose them so fast.
Yeah. You lose them on every trip, right?
Yeah, constantly. I lose them on every trip. I lose them at home. I mean, I can be sitting there at my desk, turn around, and they're gone. I can't live without them, so, you know, I have to have spare after spare after spare.
Yeah. It's kind of like me with iPads.
Yes.
Hello, Gander, November 810, Charlie Mike, with you, flight level 370.
November 810, Charlie Mike Heavy, interceptor, Goody. On the second radio, contact clearance delivery on 128.45. Confirm your oceanic clearance. Monitor me at all times, please.
2845 will monitor you at all times, 0.
Thank you.
All right, I'll monitor him if you want to get your oceanic.
Okay, that's on. You got that on number 2?
Yeah. No, I didn't put it in.
Oh.
2845.
November 810, Charlie Mike, you got a camera, 100 meters, are you ready?
Yes, sir, go ahead, 810, Charlie Mike.
810, Charlie Mike, clear destination via OMSAT, 47 north, 50 west, 48 north, 40 west, 49 north, 30 west, 50 north, 20 west, Sol Max, F, sir. From OMSAT, maintain flight level 270, Mach 80. Go ahead.
Once we leave Canadian airspace, we're handed off to the Oceanic Control Area. From our latitude, Gander Oceanic handles us first.
Bob's taking his crew rest in the jump seat.
Yeah.
You dreaming back there?
Yeah, I think I'm dreaming right now.
The three of us rotated in and out of the seats on 3-hour shifts. Even if unable to sleep, which is normally the case for me, the break is beneficial, allowing each of us to disconnect completely from all responsibilities. A heavy crew truly makes the trip pass quickly and painlessly. The short 3 hours of darkness only adds to the illusion of a quick flight, and in what felt like no time at all, I was briefing the approach and starting down over the Greece-Bulgaria border.
All right, we're doing the ADVEP 2 Romeo arrival. So I checked all the fixes in there. Got a flight altitude restriction of Omar, and then BA 375, and then BA 377 at 9. And then we're expecting the ILS Zulu runway 23, 2NH 1013, temperatures 19, winds are 260 at 8. Transition altitude is 12,000 feet. And we got 111.9, final approach course 233. Gunga is the final at 3,000. ILS DA is 290. And then sector altitude will be 3,000 feet. And we'll probably get vectors, I'm sure. And the missed approach is climb track 233 at or above 1100, turn right, Tepu, and hold at 3,000.
The west runways were in use in Istanbul, so the arrival course took us out over the city and back to join the flow of traffic to the runway. This is a very scenic arrival.
Yeah, it's a shame it's so cloudy.
I know.
Let's go flaps one.
For one.
Runner down to 3,000 feet to break 10 telling.
Turkish Public 5 on descending, is an altitude 6,000 feet.
All right, we're going to activate approach.
In another city, in a different country, on a different continent, only to turn around and head home makes the world feel small.
Charlie Mike from base 23, pin 240 degrees, 1-2-0, clear track.
1,000.
Ironically, in many ways, I'm not so well traveled. We're less than tourists, taking in the scenery through an inch and a half of glass, breathing the air for mere hours before flying away. I'm grateful for the break in the clouds and for the view from the windows, but I feel the gravitational pull from these cities tempting me to stay and explore the culture.
500.
I'll probably be back, and maybe next time I'll stay for dinner. A life nomadic means a life on the move, always pressing on to the next destination. Project brings with it unique challenges, and for every trip like this one that comes together easily, a ball breaker with seemingly unsolvable issues lurks around every corner. Our work begins in the background, weeks, even months before we climb into the cockpit and fly away. So personally being there to see it through to the end, to solve the puzzle, brings with it a great sense of accomplishment. And that's what I love about this life nomadic.